You're listening to the Touch 'Em Up podcast. I'm your host, Double M, and on today's episode, we have UFC 298, Volkanovski versus Topuria, preview, predictions, and breakdown. The fight takes place this Saturday, February 17th, from the Honda Center in Anaheim, California, with a main event bout to determine the king at 145 pounds between the longtime reigning defending greatest featherweight of all time, Alexander the Great Volkanovski, defending the championship against the undefeated challenger with almost all finishes to his name, explosive striker, amazing grappler, and standout wrestler in Ilia El Matador Topuria, coming in with an undefeated record of 14 victories and no defeats, with Volkanovski holding an impressive record of 26 victories with 3 defeats, but 2 of those losses come via a razor-close decision to Islam Makhachev in a move up to 155 and a short-notice finish loss to Islam Makhachev as well. But without any further ado, let's get this started and step into the ring. All right, guys. All right. I'm pretty excited to break down the card. I watched a lot of tape this week. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of how the fights are going to play out. We started off last week's card hot. 6-1-1 out of the 8 fights on the prelims, and then the main card just kind of fell into shambles for us. Joe Pyfer got fraud checked. Definitely got fraud checked. He should have been able to put away Hermanson. And honestly, this just goes to what I say when it comes to the way betting has become in MMA, because I've been sucking. Last year I sucked. This year I've been doing a little bit better. But if you feel like there's a 95% chance that a fight's going to finish inside the distance, if it's 2 finishers, I know this is going to be contradictory, but bet the over. Bet the fight to go the distance. Because a lot of the times you think that these new up-and-coming guys are just going to run through these longtime stablemates of the division, and you realize that they're not going to be able to do that. It's not that easy when you get to the top of the class. And just because you're able to put away Joe Schmo and GM3 with big shots, who's been finished multiple times before, and that's not a knock on Pyfer. It's just analyzing the situation for what it is. When you get those type of guys and then you go into your new main event setting and it's the first time you fought the top of the heap, they don't fall down. And if you can't get these guys to fall down, you're going to slow down. And that's what we saw. First 2 rounds went to Pyfer, and the last 3 rounds went to Jack Hermanson. Co-main event, I know we picked Andre Feely on the podcast. I ended up putting a bet on Dan Ige by knockout at plus 300, and I paired it with Pyfer KO submission for like 15 bucks for like 197. And of course, we hit the plus 300 or plus 320, but we don't hit the minus 150 or minus 160. But, you know, it is what it is. That's what I say. Like, watch out for main events. Honestly speaking, main events of pay-per-views, fight nights, I think you should skip them in terms of the betting market. I think the most money is made on the undercard and the early fights on the main card compared to the co-main and the main event. Does that mean that you can't get the main event spot on? Does that mean you can't get the co-main event spot on and make a lot of money? No, absolutely not. But just overall, I feel like the best time to make money is on the early prelims, because I don't think a lot of people pay a ton of attention to it, and they're mainly just looking at the main events and the overall fights on the main card. But yeah, that was just a little quick synopsis. I mean, Dan Ige getting that first round knockout over Feely. We knew it could happen. We knew that early it was going to be Ige, late was going to be Feely. And Ige timed that right hand perfectly, followed up with one more shot, and put Touchy Feely's lights out. But let's get into this card. Let's get into UFC 298. I feel like it's time to start this fucking breakdown. So let's go. Andre Ali versus Miranda Maverick. I'm going to be honest. I'm not spending a whole lot of time on this fight, because this fight fucking sucks. It sucks. Nobody cares about this fight. I know your MMA purists and everything are going to say that they give a shit, but honestly, I don't give a shit. I've backed Miranda Maverick against Macy Barber. She lost the decision that she clearly won. Still makes me mad to this day. Andre Ali survived 3 rounds with Natalia Silva, even though she got rocked, even though she got hurt. I think this fight is a coin flip. Andre Ali does have some grappling. She does have some wrestling. Miranda Maverick, both of these girls, I feel like, are going to want to keep this fight on the feet and stay at a distance and strike. I think Andrea Lee is the more dangerous striker. I think the more volume-based striker is Miranda Maverick. But just based on the style of fight that Miranda Maverick usually outputs, I'm going to go with Andrea Lee. I'm going to go with Lee. Again, I wouldn't bet women's MMA except for one fight we're going to talk about in a little bit. But this fight I would stay away from. But I think it's going to be a close fight either way. There's going to be a lot of exchanges on the feet. Some that Maverick win, some that Andrea Lee win. If Miranda Maverick uses her wrestling and gets some takedowns to secure the rounds, then I think she could win. But Miranda Maverick has a style that is a point fighting style, which probably means this fight is going to end by split decision. I don't see a submission. I don't see a TKO. I think this fight goes to the scorecards and we get a split. Probably the best bet would be to bet the fight ends by split decision, because I don't think we're going to get a finish. If we do, I think it might be Miranda Maverick late, but I'm going to go with Andrea Lee via split decision. I just feel like Miranda Maverick's a little bit overhyped, and she doesn't deserve all the hype that she gets in certain aspects. But still a good fighter, still knows how to, you know, strike it out on the feet, put combinations together well. But I'm going to go with Andrea Lee via split decision. Up next, Obon Elliott taking on Valentine or Vale Woodburn. You're not going to know a lot about Vale Woodburn if you don't go back and look at his regional tape. And the one thing I'll tell you is that Bo Nickel fight doesn't tell you everything that you need to know. Vale Woodburn was undefeated before he came into the UFC, and he got fed to Bo Nickel and got knocked out. And people are going to come into this fight and just immediately ride on Obon Elliott coming off the Contender Series. Elliott was clearly winning the fight on the Contender Series until he got clipped with a big right hand, got rocked, got hit with another shot, got dropped bad. Got rocked again multiple times in the fight, but was able to just push forward, control the pace, and win. But I almost feel like he was able to keep consciousness in that fight because of the fact that his opponent in, what was his name? Kaike? Let me see. Kaike Brito. Okay. Kaike Brito. So the fight with Brito on the Contender Series, Brito could have finished Obon Elliott. But he didn't put his foot on the gas as much as he needed to. I think it was more due to a cardio issue, and he didn't want to close the show. But big right hands, dropped him multiple times. But the wrestling, the forward pressure, the chain wrestling, the takedowns, the top control. You know, Obon Elliott is a good grappler. He's a good wrestler. And he's a decent striker on the feet. The more well-rounded fighter in this fight is Obon Elliott, 100%. But Vale Woodburn, this guy can crack, man. He's got big slam takedowns. Everything Woodburn does is 100% power and 100% looking to finish the fight. Woodburn, big takedowns, big uppercuts, big hooks. Seen him knock out guys standing over them while they're in a turtle position on the ground. Knocked the dude out, just hit him in the temple, put him out cold. Knocked him out with one shot on the feet. Big uppercuts. I think the uppercuts and knees are probably the best weapon that Vale Woodburn can use in this fight. Overhands, uppercuts, and knees right up the middle, because I expect Obon Elliott to look to use the jab, close the distance, and then eventually just try to push Woodburn up against the cage. There's a big strength advantage for Vale Woodburn in this fight, but I think the big technical advantage overall in terms of mixed martial arts games go to the Welsh gangster in Obon Elliott. 9 victories, he's got 7 win or 4 decisions, 2 KOs, 3 submissions. So he's kind of an even fighter. You can't really expect the guy to get a finish, and you can't really necessarily say that it's going to go to a decision. All I will tell you is that the 2 losses that Obon Elliott has are by knockout. If anybody can knock out a guy like Obon Elliott, I feel like it's a guy with the power of Vale Woodburn. But the overall forward pressure, the ability to stay in the fight, the takedowns, the top control, I think Obon Elliott wins this fight. I think Elliott has more to offer. I think he has more weapons in his MMA game. But again, you have to look at the same situation where we saw him get rocked on the Contender Series and come back. But Woodburn's only professional loss is to Bo Nickel, somebody who the UFC straps a rocket to and is pushing them to be the top of the division, a future champion. Do I think Nickel's going to be a champion? I don't, but I think he definitely will get high in terms of rankings in the division. But I don't think he'll be a champion. I think this fight is kind of a coin flip, but I'm going to go with the fighter I've seen more from, and I'm going to go with Obon Elliott. I think he's more durable. I think he knows how to survive. I do think if anybody can put his lights out, it is Vale Woodburn. So if you take Woodburn, it's going to be Woodburn by knockout. But I think the forward pressure, the wrestling, the top control. I'm going to go with Obon Elliott by submission. I think he gets those takedowns, top control, survives the first round, which is going to be hairy. He's probably going to get hurt at a certain point. The question is, can he survive? Can he survive getting hurt by Woodburn? Because he more than likely is going to get cracked. I think he can. I think he survives. I think he gets the takedowns. I think he gets to the top position, half guard, lands some big elbows, big hammer fist. We saw even in the Contender Series fight in the third round, the takedowns, the forward pressure, the ground and pound was vicious. I mean, he had full cardio even in the third round. Like, there were points where he slowed down, but he still pushed a really heavy pace. And I think that pace is something that Woodburn is not going to be able to survive. So give me Obon Elliott via a second round rear naked. All right, we'll go arm triangle. Second round arm triangle choke submission over Val Woodburn. Up next, we've got Josh Quinlan taking on Danny Left Hand to God Barlow. Josh Quinlan's a guy who's coming off his first loss in his mixed martial arts career. The Renegade, Josh Quinlan, 6 wins, all finishes, 4 KOs, 2 submissions, 1 loss via decision. That was to a former LFA champion in Trey Waters. I believe that's the last time Waters stepped into the cage. Yeah. So the last time we saw Waters inside the cage was April 2023. So he's been gone for almost a full year. Before he stepped into the UFC, he got a knockout in the second round at LFA 156. But he did lose via submission to Gabriel Bonfim, which we thought was the better Bonfim brother. I still think it's the better Bonfim brother, but they both kind of got fraud checked at this point. I think that this fight is going to come down to the technicality of Danny Barlow in terms of the overall striking game on the feet. This guy reminds me a lot of a Leon Edwards. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's as good as Leon Edwards. I'm not going to sit here and say that he puts combinations together as good as Leon Edwards, or that he even has the potential to fight the way that Leon Edwards does. But what I am going to tell you is that from what I've seen, this guy is pretty good. He's good. He got rocked on the Contender Series and dropped by Raheem Forrest, came back, hurt him with the left hand over and over, hit him with some big uppercuts and put him away. But 5 finishes out of 7 wins, never lost in his MMA career. You got to worry about the Contender Series guys, because when they come into the UFC, they do tend to get fraud checked more than they actually tend to show out. You know, I guess you could tell that to Sean O'Malley, but I like what I've seen from this Barlow kid. Good movement, good footwork. Moves in and out. Very good back step counter left hand. 1-2 down the middle. The left hand of Danny Barlow. I mean, the nickname's Left Hand to God, but the left hand of Danny Barlow is a machine. It's a machine gun. It's quick. It's fast. It's efficient. And it's powerful. And Josh Quinlan is a good knockout artist as well. He has good wrestling, good takedowns. I feel like if Quinlan wants to win this fight, he has to make it dirty. Get on the inside. Single collar clinch. Uppercuts. Hooks. Overhands, change levels, get the takedowns, try to get Danny Barlow on the ground, takedown control, look for ground and pound, look for a submission. I think the wrestling of Josh Quinlan is what brings the victory to him in this spot, but I also think that Barlow's just too sharp for him, man. I think he's too sharp for Quinlan. Quinlan, everybody looks at that Jason Witt knockout, and everybody's like, oh my God, Quinlan's power is unbelievable. He knocked out NyQuil, man, dude. Like, the guy gets hit, he goes down. That's Jason Witt. That's the guy that he is. When he gets hit with a big shot, he's knocked out. So I don't really take a ton of into consideration when I look at that. And when I saw his last fight against Waters, he got taken down at certain points. He showcased good wrestling. He had some good combinations that he put together. You know, he's not only, you know, a one-hitter quitter fighter, but he falls in love with his power. And against a sharpshooter, against a sniper like Danny Barlow, who has good movement, good in-and-out movement, good lateral movement, good ability to, like I said, counter with the left hand, throw the jab, use his kicks as well. I think Barlow's just going to be too quick, too sharp on the counter, and I think he's going to get a TKO in this fight. So I'm going to go with Danny Barlow, left hand to God, to defeat Josh Quinlan via first-round TKO. I think that Quinlan's going to try to land the big power. And don't get me wrong, if Quinlan lands a big left hook, if he lands a big overhand right, he can 100% knock out Danny Barlow, which makes this fight tricky. The Obon Elliott Val Woodburn fight and the Danny Barlow Josh Quinlan fight. It makes it tricky from a betting perspective, because do you want to put your money on these guys who haven't necessarily been tested inside the UFC, except for Woodburn, but we saw what happened. But then you can't take too much into that consideration because of how highly the UFC thinks of Bo Nickel. But I'm going to go with Danny Barlow, like I said. I think he's just too sharp, too clean. Quinlan has good striking. He uses good low kicks. He has good wrestling. The best way for Quinlan to win this fight is to get on the inside, get to the body lock, use the takedowns, use the top control, try to land big ground and pound and tire out Danny Barlow, because the first round is going to be a shootout. But I think it's a shootout that the more technical and sharper striker wins. So give me left hand to God, Danny Barlow, first round TKO over Josh Quinlan. Up next, we've got a battle in the light heavyweight division. This is a really solid fight between Zhang Mingyang taking on Brenson Ribeiro. We saw Zhang Mingyang on the road to UFC, where he was able to get that first round knockout. Just a brutal, I believe it was a left hand or a right hook. I think it was a left hook or a right hook, and then a follow-up shot. But he was out after the first shot up against the cage. Average fight time, 3 minutes, 57 seconds. This guy is looking to get in and get out. When you look at Ribeiro, I feel like the sharper striker in this fight 100% is Zhang Mingyang. He is going to be the sharper, slicker fighter. Average fight time for Ribeiro is 3 minutes, 47 seconds. And then, like we said, on the side of Mingyang Zhang, his average fight time is 3 minutes, 57 seconds. So I think that the sharper fighter is Mingyang. He uses good footwork. He has a good 1-2 down the middle. He's got a good left hook. He uses good lateral movement, and he doesn't overcommit on his movement. I think that's the biggest difference I saw in the tape, was that when Ribeiro moves in and out, when he moves left and right, when he avoids, he kind of overcommits and over-exaggerates all of his movement, which can make it a lot easier for strikers the caliber of a Mingyang to see. I feel like the less telegraphed, the sharper, the more technical fighter is Zhang Mingyang. But at the same time, all of the victories for Brenson Ribeiro come via finish. He was a 6-1, 7-1 underdog on the Contender Series. I backed him on the money line in that main event. I think I ended up winning like $600-700 in a parlay. But I mean, at a plus $600 or $700 on the Contender Series, unless you're some fat, out of shape janitor who just decided to take the call for an extra $200 while you get beat up by their golden boy, then okay, don't take that fight. But other fights, man, like, I think this fight is probably going to be one of your best fights on the card. I really do. I see a lot of areas in this fight where both guys can win. I do think we get a finish. But I mean, you look at Ribeiro, 9 wins by KO, 6 submissions. Out of his 5 losses, he's been finished 4 times, 2 submissions, 2 KOs. When you look at Zhang Mingyang, he's got 16 wins, 16 finishes, 10 KOs, 6 submissions. Out of his 6 losses, 3 losses by KO, 2 by submission. The Mountain Tiger versus, what's Ribeiro's nickname? The Mountain Tiger versus the Gorilla, man. Like, this fight matches up so well. This is going to be one of your fights of the night, and somebody's going to get finished. But from what I've seen, Ribeiro's got a very solid right hand. He's got a good left hook. He uses his jab well. On the Contender Series, it seemed like he started off kind of slow, and then he was able to step back, find that right hand counter over the jab of his opponent. The only thing I don't like is when he gets backed up, when he gets pushed back, when he gets put up against the cage, he kind of tends to swing wild, overcommit, big overhands, big uppercuts, a lot of overreactions when they pressure him. And I feel like against a fighter like Zhang Mingyang in the Mountain Tiger, you overreact like that, he's going to find the sharpshooter openings. Because the one thing I will say about Mingyang is, even when he has an opponent hurt, when he has him rocked, he doesn't really overcommit. It's not big overhands, big uppercuts, wide hooks. It's just sharp, technical shots, jab, 1-2 down the middle, straight right hand, circle left, left hook right hand, moving laterally, moving in and out, controlling the range. He's the sharper, more clean fighter. But I've also seen Zhang Mingyang get knocked out cold in a fight. I think it was a long time ago. It was this one between John Vake. He got knocked out 2 minutes, 18 seconds into round 1. But he also has a loss to Askar Mazarov via KO back in December of 2018. Askar Mazarov is the guy who went by like 17 different names in his MMA career, and had like an overall record of like 10-25. Like, the guy has some wins, but he has a lot of losses. He got knocked out by Mazarov. He got knocked out by Sergey Podayev, who currently has a record of 7-2. But when was the last time he fought? Last time he fought was November 2019. But he knocked him out. You know, and both of these guys can get clipped. Both of these guys can get knocked out. Both of these guys have grappling. You see that both of them have submission finishes. Mean Yang's got a rear naked choke, an armbar win. But that loss to Askar Mazarov, man, that's not a good look, especially with how he looked in the UFC. Now, Mean Yang looked good on the road to UFC, like I said. Big, huge knockout shot against George Tokos. But that guy's not technically UFC level. We don't necessarily know if Ribeiro's UFC level, but from what I've seen, he looks to be UFC level. I watched a fight on the regional scene. It was on UFC Fight Pass, where it was a lot of takedowns, a lot of wrestling. He got taken down. He reversed position. He got dropped. He went for a takedown. Ribeiro's a lot more wild, which I think does play into the hand of Zhang Mingyang in terms of the counter striking. And I do think that Mingyang can clip Ribeiro and knock him out. But based off the fact that this guy lost to Askar Mazarov, based off the fact that I feel like Ribeiro looked clean on the Contender Series with his jab, with his 1-2. He wasn't as wild as what I've seen in previous fights. I feel like he's coming into this fight a little bit more technical, a little bit cleaner. I'm going to go with the underdog in Brenson Ribeiro to get the job done here by knockout. I think it's going to be a first-round knockout. I think the Gorilla is going to beat the Mountain Tiger. Now, I think overall the better fighter from a technical basis is Zhang Mingyang. But, I mean, looking at his record, looking at the times I've seen him get knocked out, I mean, the guy's been knocked out cold. Not TKO, knocked out cold. And I think Ribeiro can do the same thing. So I'm going to go Brenson Ribeiro to find the home for that right hand. I think he lands a big shot over the jab of Mingyang, knocks him out, and puts him down in round one. So give me Brenson, the Gorilla Ribeiro, to topple the Mountain Tiger via first round TKO at UFC 298. But this is a really solid fight, one of the best fights on the card, and one that you guys really need to look out for 100%. Up next, we've got a battle in the UFC's bantamweight division between Rinya Nakamura taking on Carlos Vera. Short and sweet. Rinya Nakamura is going to run through this kid. But the one thing I will say about Vera is that he does seem to have pretty good jiu-jitsu, ability to work off of his back, ability to throw up submissions. But at the same time, all of his losses in his MMA career have come by finish and by submission. And I think with a fighter the caliber of a Rinya Nakamura, I mean, this guy, well, all of his finish losses, I should say, have come by submission. Out of his 11 wins, 5 submissions, 1 KO, 1 or 5 decisions. But I think that this fight is going to play out where if you're backing Vera as a plus 800 underdog or something like that, then you back Vera by submission because that's probably the only way he's going to win. But at this point, I think Rinya Nakamura is going to run through this kid. I know that he didn't run through Fernie Garcia and we all expected him to. He won that fight by decision, right? Yeah, by decision. Before that, he knocked out Toshiomi Kazama first round, 33 seconds in. I know a lot of people are going to pick the submission because that's just kind of how this guy fights. Like, he's a big grappler, but he doesn't have a lot of submissions in his career. I'm going to go with a knockout for Rinya Nakamura in round one. I think they're going to close the distance. Nakamura's got good movement, good in-and-out movement, good controlling of the range. Good, sharp, technical striking, ability to put combinations together, good takedowns, good top control. I mean, this guy can kind of do everything. His nickname is the hybrid, and that plays pretty well to his fighting style. He can do everything. Even in the fight that he won via decision against Fernie Garcia, he wasn't able to get a finish, but he clearly won that fight by decision, dominated, and I think this kid is going to have a lot to offer the UFC in his coming fights, even with a step up in competition. The Toshiomi Kazama fight, I know he knocked him out. It looked good then. Garrett Armfield knocks out Toshiomi Kazama early in their fight. So that puts a little asterisk on that fight. But then you saw what Garrett Armfield just did to Brad Katona in Katona's home country of Canada. I'm going to go with Rinya Nakamura by first round knockout. I think he catches him stepping in, jumps on him, and then gets him out of there with a TKO. So we're going Rinya Nakamura first round TKO against Carlos Vera. But quick breakdown, wouldn't bet this fight, wouldn't bet anything except maybe Nakamura to win in round one. But other than that, I mean, I feel like you're kind of grasping at straws there. If they give you like the finish line via KO sub at like anything under minus 300, then I would take it. but it's probably not going to be. So Rinya Nakamura, first round TKO. Up next, we move to a fight in the heavyweight division between Marcos Rogerio de Lima taking on Justin Taffa, the brother of Junior Taffa. 21-10-1 for Marcos Rogerio de Lima. 7 victories, 3 defeats for Justin Badman Taffa. Who is the more well-rounded fighter, Marcos Rogerio de Lima? Who is the better grappler, Marcos Rogerio de Lima? Who is the fighter who's probably going to have the better cardio over 15 minutes, Marcos Rogerio de Lima? Who is the fighter that's probably going to win the fight, Justin Taffa? I'm going to be honest. I'm really going to be honest with you guys here. I think that Justin Taffa is going to find the chin of Marcos Rogerio de Lima and knock him out in the first round. Now, if it goes into the second, if it goes into the third, I do think de Lima probably has controlled the range, pushed Justin Taffa up against the cage, gotten takedowns, used good low kicks to close the distance as well, and, you know, probably just out-techniqued a guy like Taffa. But we know that de Lima's the better fighter. The path of least resistance, get the takedowns, top control, half guard, full mount, ground and pound, either a ground and pound TKO or a submission. But he also has good striking, he's got good low kicks, and he puts his combinations together well. But we saw him get knocked out in about 30 seconds in the first round against Derek Lewis with a flying knee. The minute this guy gets hit, the minute this guy gets hurt, he tends to kind of ball up and call it a day unless he's in control. And with the power of a guy like Justin Taffa, we have seen Taffa get knocked out before by Jorgen De Castro, but I think the power right hand, the big left hook of Justin Taffa, I think the minute he finds the chin of Marcos Rogerio de Lima, he's going to put him out and he's going to finish the fight. So I'm going to take Justin Taffa via first round TKO. I think it's a pretty self-explanatory fight. I could see it going long, but I don't think we make it the decision. I don't think we make it the distance. But if I'm going to pick a winner, I'm going to go with the underdog in Justin Taffa because he has that one-hitter-quitter knockout power. But at the same time, de Lima does have the takedowns, the top control, the submissions, the ground and pound, the really solid low kicks to kind of slow down that boxing approach of Taffa. But I'm going to take Taffa first-round knockout. I think he finds the chin of Marcos Rogerio de Lima. I'll even go as much to say as he does it in the first 90 seconds. I'm going to go with a first-round KO within the first 90 seconds of the fight for Justin Taffa, landing that big right hand on the chin of Marcos Rogerio de Lima and putting him out. Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern. Very interesting fight, but I feel like the odds are very, very, very off in this one. Everybody's looking at the Jessica Andrade fight for Mackenzie Dern and the Jessica Andrade fight for Amanda Lemos. Andrade has wins over both of these girls. One, a TKO most recently over Mackenzie Dern, which Dern just looked absolutely dreadful and got knocked out, but got dropped like 20 times. And then Amanda Lemos got submitted with a standing arm triangle choke in the first round. Now, could Dern get a standing arm triangle? Could Dern lock up a submission? Yes, the only way that Mackenzie Dern wins this fight is by getting on top of Amanda Lemos, getting the armbar, getting the back, looking for a rear naked choke, and submitting Amanda Lemos. You know, case in point. Amanda Lemos doesn't have the best takedown defense. She does get taken down. She does get controlled. She got taken down and controlled by Weili Zhang, but I think Zhang could do the exact same thing to Mackenzie Dern. I think she could take her down. I think she could do whatever she wants to most of the girls in this division. But when I break this fight down, I just see a fighter who is so much more comfortable on the feet against a fighter who, yes, does have really good jiu-jitsu, who, yes, can look for submissions, but doesn't have good takedowns, doesn't have good takedown entries, and doesn't really know how to get the submissions and grappling off unless they get into a scramble where Mackenzie Dern just somehow winds up on top. And I don't think Lemos is going to give that to her. Now, do I think Lemos is that hard to take down? No. She has a 55% takedown defense. Mackenzie Dern only has a 14% takedown accuracy rate. So although she's this world-class jiu-jitsu grappler, although she showcased good striking against Angela Hill, and yes, Angela Hill did give Amanda Lemos a close fight, but she ate a front kick to the face for it, I think this is Amandina all day. As Lucrative MMA says, this is Amanda Murder all day. And at minus 135, Jesus Christ. That's one of the best numbers you could get. Even if it goes to minus 190, you're getting a great number on Amanda Lemos. Because Lemos is very technical on the feet. She's got good kicks, good boxing, very good left hook, good overhands, one-twos down the middle, good low kicks, can even jump guillotines and defend takedowns. We saw in the fight against Michelle Waterson, she wizarded the takedown, kicked her way back up, wizard kicked, and then jumped on the arm in guillotine and got the sub. I even think Amanda Lemos could submit Mackenzie Dern in this fight with a front choke, with a guillotine if she rocks her and hurts her. But the smart thing is to keep it on the feet, keep it at striking distance, and just butcher Mackenzie Dern, which is exactly what I think Amanda Lemos is going to do. Amanda Lemos via murder. Amanda Lemos, first round TKO. I think she's going to knock Mackenzie Dern out. But at this price, just moneyline it. You know, if you're going to play Dern, it's probably Dern by submission. But again, a 14% takedown accuracy rate. Yes, she has good jiu-jitsu, but she doesn't have the avenue to take in order to get to the destination. Unless Amanda Lemos makes a mistake. So yes, she could get submitted. But I think more than often we see Lemos knock Dern's head into the stratosphere. If you thought the Jessica Andrade TKO was bad, I think Amanda Lemos is going to do her even worse. I'm going to go with a clean KO in round one. A big right hand or a big left hook that puts Mackenzie Dern out cold. Amanda Lemos, first round knockout at minus 135. Hammer that motherfucker. All right, up next, we're going to move to a battle in the first fight on the main card in the middleweight division between the number 15-ranked middleweight and Anthony Fluffy Hernandez taking on the standout kickboxer in Roman Kopylov. Now, these are two guys that I don't like to pick against. I rarely ever pick against Kopylov, and I rarely ever pick against Anthony Hernandez. And I feel like this fight is... it could go one of two ways. If it's a straight-up striking match, then Kopylov's probably going to win with a body kick. He's going to land that big left kick to the body or a big head kick and put down Anthony Hernandez, more than likely to the body because he has a little bit of a fluffy body. But Roman Kopylov losing this fight looks like how every other Anthony Hernandez fight looks. Forward pressure, decent 1-2s, good straight punches, constant pressure, chaining takedown attempts together, getting in the top position, looking for ground and pound, constantly looking to threaten with the guillotine, the arm in guillotine, threatening the arm in guillotine from the back, looking to take the back, looking for constantly attacking the neck, and looking to set up submissions and break the opponent. If it stays striking, I think Kopylov wins. I think Kopylov is live for a round one knockout, because I think if Kopylov wins, it will be an early fight. He's very good at using that lateral movement. He uses the jab, uses the check hook, big left kick to the body, big left head kick, attacking the inside leg, 1-2 down the middle. He has very good ability to use his feet to move around and to catch opponents as they step into range. Hernandez is going to be there for the counters. He's going to get hit, but I just feel like the forward pressure, guys like Kopylov don't do well when they get pressured backwards. I don't necessarily think Kopylov is a counter striker. He's a very good striker. He has very good kicks. He has very good head kicks and body kicks, but he doesn't necessarily do too well when he has the pressure put on him. Can he land some decent strikes? Can he land a straight left? Can he land a check hook? Yes, 100%. But he can't really put combinations together moving backwards. And I think that's where Hernandez is going to take over this fight. The forward pressure, pushing Kopylov up against the cage. And Kopylov doesn't have bad takedown defense. He's got a 92% takedown defense. But he's never faced a wrestler with the chain wrestling, the takedown attempts, and the forward pressure of an Anthony Hernandez. Hernandez is a 57% takedown accuracy, but he averages 6.79 takedowns per 15 minutes. He averages almost 7 takedowns in a 15-minute fight, which averages out to about 2.5 takedowns a round. But that doesn't count. He shoots, if he's getting 6.79, that means that he's shooting 12, 13, 14, 15 takedowns, which would equal out to about 3 takedowns a round. But you're not counting the forward pressure, the over-under clinch, pushing up against the cage, knees, elbows. Of course, Kopylov can knock out Anthony Hernandez with a body kick, with a head kick. The forward, as he moves forward, 100% he's live for a knockout. But the longer this fight goes, the more the fight moves in the favor of Anthony Hernandez. With the forward pressure, with the wrestling, with the takedowns, with the top control, with the elbows, with the hammer fist, with the ability to look for that front choke, with the ability to look for a submission. I think Anthony Hernandez is going to break Roman Kopylov. This guy has been finished. He got finished with a knee to the body. by Kevin Holland. He's been finished in other fights as well, but I think Anthony Hernandez is going to shine here. Excuse me. I have to... Woo! Thank you. Sorry. I had to sneeze real quick, but I think the forward pressure and the grappling of Anthony Hernandez is going to be too much for Kapilov. Guys like Kapilov, like I said, they don't do that well on the back foot in terms of a back foot counter striking. They do better moving forward. They do better controlling the distance. But more importantly, they do better when it's controlled pace. And the one thing that Hernandez isn't going to give Kapilov is a controlled pace throughout the fight. And I think the forward pressure, the takedowns, the top control, eventually he's just going to break Kapilov, slow him down. And I'm going to go with a third round guillotine choke submission for Anthony Fluffy Hernandez over Roman Kapilov. I think the best bet is Hernandez by submission or Hernandez to win in round three. I think it's going to be a sub or a ground and pound TKO, and I think he's going to do it in round two or round three, but I'm going to favor round three. But I could see Kapilov breaking earlier because he does tend to have more success than the average fighter in the UFC. So I'm going to go with a third round guillotine choke submission for Anthony Hernandez, but I could see it towards the midpoint to tail end of the second round, but I like Fluffy here. I'm surprised he's the favorite. I thought the favorite was going to be Kapilov, but taking a shot on Kapilov, if you're going to take him, I would just take Kapilov by knockout because that's probably how he's going to win. But I'm going to go Anthony Fluffy Hernandez round two or three guillotine choke submission. I'll go round three guillotine. Up next, we've got a battle in the bantamweight division. A very interesting fight between Henry Triple C Cejudo, the former double champ, triple champ if you count the Olympic gold medal, former bantamweight, former flyweight champion. A lot of people thought he'd probably beat Aljamain Sterling in his last fight. Now he's taking on Aljamain Sterling's training partner, and the more relentless training partner, the more grinding training partner in Merab the Machine Dvalishvili. I don't think I've ever picked Merab to win a fight in the UFC. I picked Aldo to beat him. I picked Jan to beat him. I picked Moraes to beat him. We got very close with the Marlon Moraes pick. I really thought he was going to knock out Merab, but he didn't. I think Cejudo, if he wins this fight, he has to win by knockout. I don't think he wins a decision. I don't think he's going to win on the scorecards. I think he has to put him out and take the approach that Moraes has. Now, the one thing that we can say is that Henry Cejudo doesn't have the same power as Marlon Moraes, but he also broke Marlon Moraes and TKO'd him to become the double champ at bantamweight for the vacant title. And at the same time, Cejudo's very fast with his knees and his kicks, and I think with the forward pressure wrestling style of a Merab, those knees, the counter knees, the head kicks, those are going to be the ways that Cejudo wins this fight. Timing the level change, timing the takedowns with knees, timing it with head kicks. If you go back and you watch the one fight that really comes to my mind, it's the fight with Dominic Cruz at UFC 249. When Cruz was moving left and right, he was bobbing, he was shucking, he was jiving, and he went to go one way and fake the other. Cejudo timed it and landed a knee as he lowered his level, dropped him, and put him out. It was so fast. It was so crisp. And Cejudo is so crisp and clean that he could definitely catch Merab on the takedown entry. He's got good 1-2s down the middle. He's definitely the better striker. But the more volume, the heavier pace, the takedowns, the pressure. Merab gets 6.55 takedowns per 15-minute fight with only a 36% accuracy. That means he's shooting about 15 takedowns. That's 5 takedowns a round in a 3-minute or a 3-round fight, which is what we're getting here. I think this is going to be a close fight. I think it's going to be competitive. But if we look at significant strikes, 4.46 from Merab, 3.93 for Cejudo. He takes less strikes than Cejudo at 2.41 to 3.15. He's got a 56% striking defense to a 60% striking defense rate for Henry Cejudo. I think that this fight is very close in terms of overall, but I think it's going to play out not close. It's going to go either forward pressure, combinations, push up against the cage, takedown, top control, ground and pound, rinse, repeat for Merab, or it's going to be Cejudo timing the level change with a big knee or a head kick, rocking him and knocking out Merab. If there's a finish in this fight, I think it comes from the side of Cejudo. So if you're expecting the fight to not go to a decision, it's probably because Cejudo catches Merab and knocks him out. Cejudo does have good takedown defense. He has an 83% takedown defense rate. which is going to make it harder for Merab to get the takedowns. But the thing is, even if Merab doesn't get the takedowns, just getting in the clinch, just landing punches, just landing knees, just pushing Cejudo up against the cage, I think it's going to be a very close two rounds. But I think Merab is going to take over in round three and get more takedowns, get more strikes, have more output, get more takedowns, get more top control time, and steal two out of the three rounds. I don't think it's going to be a three-round dominance for Merab. I do think that Cejudo is going to have his moments. I think he's going to land the bigger shots. And like I said, if there is a finish in this fight, I expect it to come from the side of Henry Cejudo. I see a lot of people betting on Merab, and it makes sense. I'm going to pick Merab to win. I'm going to pick Merab Dvalishvili to win via 29-28 split decision. I think a smart play, if you're going to bet the fight, might even be to bet the fight to end by split. Because the way both of these guys fight, usually Merab dominates. It's not going to be a split or a close fight. Henry usually finishes his opponents, but he can go to a split decision. I think based on the way that this fight plays out, with the takedowns, with the grappling, with the ability to kind of cancel each other out in terms of the wrestling, it's going to be that forward pressure. It's going to be the entries into the wrestling positions and not so much the wrestling itself that's going to win this fight for Merab. The over-unders, the double-unders, pushing up against the cage, the knees, the elbows, the strikes off the break in the clinch, the 1-2s to enter back into the clinch. But I think Henry's going to be competitive, but I'm going to go Merab Dvalishvili, 29-28, split decision. I think there is value in betting the fight to end by split decision. But if there is a finish, it does come from Cejudo landing a head kick on the level change or landing a knee on a level change and knocking out Merab. But I'm going to go with Merab, the machine, Dvalishvili, the number 2 ranked bantamweight, to win the fight via 29-28 split decision. And now we get to the featured bout of the evening in the welterweight division between the number 8 ranked Jeff Hands of Steel Neal versus the number 10 ranked undefeated Ian Machado Gary. Gary comes in with a record of 13 wins, no losses. Jeff Neal, 15 victories and 5 defeats. This is a very, very close matchup. It's a very interesting fight because I don't think we're going to see a lot of grappling at all. I think it's going to be a purely striking matchup for as long as it lasts. And it's going to be southpaw versus orthodox. Ian Gary's orthodox fighter, lead left foot. Jeff Neal, lead right foot. So it's going to be the battle of the outside foot positioning. That's something we talk about on this podcast all the time. And it's no different in this matchup between opposite stance fighters. Jeff Neal is going to be looking to use that darting left hand to slip and then pivot off to the outside of the lead foot of Ian Gary. Straight left and a right hook as a counter check hook, or a check hook to circle off to set up the avenue for the straight left hand. He also has good returns on the kicks, and I think that's a big weapon in this fight. Ian Gary, 1-2s down the middle, very good straight punches, good knees as opponents try to close the distance. He has that counter knee up the middle, and he has good head kicks. We saw him drop a southpaw in Daniel Rodriguez with a big left head kick. After hitting the body a couple times, he went upstairs and hit him with that right head kick. I'm sorry, not a left head kick. Hit him with the right head kick against the left hand dominant southpaw. And it's going to be similar in this fight with Jeff Neal. But the one thing I do think that is different is the fact that not only is Neal better in the pocket, I feel like he has better head movement than the other southpaws that Ian Gary has fought. I feel like he has a smaller window where he executes his counters to where they're not as telegraphed as some of the other fighters that that Ian Gary has faced before. A lot of the other southpaws that he has faced, they kind of make their telegraphs and their reads a little bit more well-known. The straight left hand of Jeff Neal is a piston. The counter right hook is a little bit telegraphed, but the way he sets it up with his head movement and his lateral movement, it's very, very similar. It's very well executed and it's very clean. Jeff Neal is a very clean striker. He stepped in with Shavkat Rakhmonov. It wasn't short notice, but I think Jeff Neal was injured going into that fight because the fight had been canceled one time before. And although he got rocked and then eventually submitted by Rakhmonov, it went to the third round. He rocked Shavkat in that third round with a big slip counter right hook and a straight left hand and hurt him multiple times. And even, was constantly landing that straight left hand, but the pressure of Shavkat gave Neil a lot of trouble. The difference between Ian Garry and Shavkat is Ian Garry isn't really a pressure fighter. He's a fighter who stays on the outside. He's a fighter who likes to keep it at range and is going to pick you apart with clean striking. Jab, jab, 1-2 down the middle, 2-3, low kick, body kick, 1-2, head kick. He's going to be looking for the right cross to the right body kick and the right cross to the right head kick against Jeff Neal. I feel like he's going to be trying to hide a lot of his kicks behind the power in his punches, and trying to find ways where Neal isn't going to be able to get on the inside. But I noticed something. Ian Garry does very well when he's controlling the range. If he's not controlling the range and Neal is able to use that slick footwork, use that little switch 45 where he briefly switches to orthodox and then switches back to southpaw to square up the hips of Ian Garry, it's going to cut down the distance and it's going to make those sharp, clean counters that don't have a lot of windup find openings on Garry. If Garry doesn't have the distance that he needs, he's not going to be able to keep, Ian Gary's not going to be able to keep that distance to land the strikes that he wants to. Ian Garry wins fights based on being pretty. And Jeff Neal is not a fighter you're going to be able to be pretty against. And I think the inside fighting of Jeff Neal, the straight left hand of Jeff Neal, the counter returns on kicks, he's very good at catching kicks and returning, are going to be a big problem. I think the biggest weapons for Ian Garry are going to be the straight right hand, the check left hook, the right body kick, and the right head kick. The right body kicks and head kicks are going to be the most effective and powerful weapons that Ian Garry is going to employ. We saw Ian Garry get clipped with a left hook from Song Kanan. We see that he has issues backing up and that he does leave openings four counters when he throws his combinations. There's no reason he shouldn't have been able to finish Neil Magny. Now, we saw Neil Magny finish off Mike Malott in the third round. There's no reason why Ian Garry shouldn't have finished Neil Magny in that fight. I feel like he played it safe. You got to take into consideration also, my boys call it the script. You got to take it into consideration all the things that Ian Garry's dealing with his wife and how they live with the ex-husband and all the fan backlash and, you know, him coming into the last fight wearing Jeff Neal's mugshot on his shirt. There is bad blood in this fight. I do think Garry is going to be able to perform, but at the same time, I think all the mental distress, even though he acts like it doesn't get to him, the fact he didn't show up to the press conference with Luque and pulled out of the fight, he was sick, yes, whatever, but the fact that he didn't know he was sick going into fight week, I mean, it just doesn't really sit right with me. I feel like a fighter like Neal who has knockout power, very good technical boxing and very short, crisp punches and can also return kicks as well and fight on the inside and isn't going to quit if he gets rocked. He'll try to come back, try to recover. I think Jeff Neal's going to knock out Ian Garry. And as a plus 200 underdog, I think those odds are really disrespectful, to be honest, on the side of Jeff Neal. I do not see a reason why. I guess he's undefeated. He's 13-0. But Jeff Neal gave Rakhmonov everything he could handle. Gave Rakhmonov the toughest fight of his career. He knocked out Vicente Luque, the guy who I picked to beat Ian Garry the first time. He knocked out Luque, dropped him like three times, and gave him a fucking brain bleed from how bad he whooped his ass. Now, it's a different fight with Garry and Luque. He's going to have a 4-inch height advantage and but no reach advantage. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Ian Garry's 6'3", Jeff Neal's 5'11". There's going to be a 4-inch height advantage, but there's no reach advantage. 75-inch reach for Jeff Neal, 74.5-inch reach for Ian Garry. So even though he's taller, and yes, he probably can use his reach and range a little bit better, when it comes down to it numerically, he doesn't actually have a reach advantage over Jeff Neal. And I think Jeff Neal's straight left hand, the right hook, the left head kicks, the body kicks, the inside fighting with the uppercuts and the hooks, he's very, very clean with his short, crisp, tight punches. I think he's going to catch Ian Garry on the chin, and I think he's going to knock him out. I'm going with Jeff, Hands of Steel Neal, to hand Ian Garry his first professional loss in MMA via a second-round TKO. I think Jeff Neal's going to put a whooping on Ian Garry in this fight. Now, could Garry keep him at a distance? Could Garry land a head kick and hurt him? Yes. Could he land a body kick and hurt him? Yes. Could he keep him at a distance and outpoint him? Yes. But with the way Jeff Neal fights, with the heart that Jeff Neal has, with the technique and crisp tools that he has in his toolbox, I think the counter ability of Jeff Neal is going to be on point here. And I think he's going to catch Ian Garry with those big counters as Ian Gary's backing up on the retreat. Just big counter shots and just short, crisp punches that Gary doesn't see, and he's going to put him out. So give me the number 8 ranked Jeff Hands of Steel Neil to defeat the number 10 ranked Ian Machado Gary via second round knockout in this fight at UFC 298. Up next in the middleweight division, you have the co-main event of the evening between the number 3 ranked Robert the Reaper Whitaker taking on the number 6 ranked Paulo Bohachinha, the Eraser Costa. Whitaker versus Costa, if it stays on the feet and it goes to a decision, we know how Whitaker's going to fight. Whitaker's going to jab, 1-2, stay on the outside, move in and out with the karate stance. You'll use those front kicks up the middle, the side kicks to the knee, the 1-2 rear head kick, the lead uppercut, right cross, rear head kick, the cross into the lead head kick, a lot of movement, the jab, the check hook, the 1-2s kind of darting in with the right hand. Whitaker's going to want to keep this at kicking range or just outside of kicking range and be the faster, quicker, slicker fighter. He's going to want to keep it on the outside, and he's going to want to dance around Costa, find big counters that could potentially rock him, piece him up and outpoint him over 15 minutes, maybe even use his wrestling. I could see him using some counter takedowns towards the end of each of the rounds to kind of seal the rounds in his favor. But the problem is, I know Paulo Costa is a fighter who is kind of a head case. Like, we think he's going to show up. He won't show up. He gets injured. He has staff. There's a bunch of problems. We haven't seen him compete. You know, we saw him beat Rockhold, and he looked pretty good in that fight with his grappling, with his takedowns, with his wrestling, with his technical striking. But he should have beat Rockhold. I mean, that's kind of how it should have gone. And Rockhold made it a very close fight. Now, Rockhold's a veteran, one of the best in the division for like overall MMA history. But I do think that Costa gives Whitaker a lot of trouble that I don't think people are understanding going into this fight. Yes, Whitaker's very good on the outside. Yes, Whitaker's very good at point fighting, at winning fights on the scorecards. Usually, if you're going to bet Robert Whitaker, you're going to bet Whitaker by decision because that's just the way he fights. He pokes and prods. He uses the jab. He enters on the double jab. 1-2, check hook, right head kick. 1-2, right head kick, lead uppercut, right hand, right head kick, counter takedowns. He's a very good, well-rounded fighter. But Patrickus du Plessis was a huge underdog against Whitaker. And he not only took him down and landed big ground and pound at the end of the first round, but he knocked him out in the second round. I think du Plessis by KO in round, just in general, was like plus 550. I bet on du Plessis by knockout over Whitaker. And I made my money that night. And I could see the same exact thing happening with Costa knocking out Whitaker. Whitaker is a very technical fighter. He's a very talented fighter. He's a very well-rounded, technical individual. But he's never had the best chin, and he's never had the best durability. I know what you're going to say. He got dropped by Yoel Romero, and he survived. He did. But Yoel Romero and Paulo Costa are very similar, and I would venture to say that the more well-rounded fighter with better tools in their toolbox between Romero and Costa is Paulo Costa. Now, with the layoff, with all the time off, with all the time in between fights, you can't really make concrete assumptions as to how is Paulo Costa going to show up in this fight. But based on the pictures you see on his IG, the man looks like he's in very, very good shape, okay? And when I look at this fight from a technical perspective, I do think Whitaker can outpoint him. I do think Whitaker would probably win if it goes to a decision. But the bigger fight-altering moments, the bigger power is going to come from Paulo Costa. The concussive knockout power is going to come from Paulo Costa. And I know what you're going to say. Costa doesn't have a lot of knockouts in his UFC career unless it's Uriah Hall, unless it's Johnny Hendricks. That's all true. But if there is somebody that Paulo Costa can knock out, I think it's a guy with the chin and durability issues of a Robert Whitaker. I do think Paulo Costa is viable to land a big shot and hurt Robert Whitaker. And if you go back and you watch the du Plessis fight, do you remember that when du Plessis hurt him, the first thing that led up to the finish after he rocked him with that jab was a body shot? He hit him to the body, and that's really what ended the fight. Hit him to the body, came back up top one more time. But the body work of Costa is some of the best in the division. He knows how to rip those uppercuts and left hooks to the body. And that's one of the reasons why he knocked out Uriah Hall in their fight. This is going to be a stand-up fight. If anybody resorts to the wrestling, I think it's going to be Robert Whitaker. But I'm going with Paulo Costa as the underdog to knock out Robert Whitaker. He doesn't have the best durability, and going into the same thing as the du Plessis fight, I feel like he doesn't have the highest motivation to get back to the middleweight championship, especially knowing now that the champion is a guy who not only beat him, who not only took him down, who not only dropped him, but finished him off when Robert Whittaker was a huge favorite. Well, here he is again as a minus 205 favorite against a guy with arguably more power than Du Plessis, arguably a better technical fighter than Du Plessis, arguably has more tools in his toolbox than Du Plessis. The only thing that's hurting him is the inactivity. But if we're going off actual skill set, if we're going off actual ability to finish the fight, if we're going off actual ability to win the fight, it's Paulo Costa all day. Paulo Costa knocking out Robert Whittaker. And that's what I'm going to go with. That's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with Paulo the Eraser Costa, the number 6 ranked middleweight, to defeat the number 3 ranked Robert the Reaper Whittaker via a second round TKO. I could see it in the first. I really could, but I'll go second round based off the respect I have for Whittaker. All right, up next in the main event of the evening for the featherweight championship, you have the undefeated challenger in Ilia El Matador Topuria taking on the champion, the man undefeated at featherweight, the man who's never tasted defeat at 145 pounds, Alexander the Great Volkanovski, a combined record of 40 victories with only 3 defeats between the two. You have 26-3 Alexander Volkanovski, 14-0 Ilia Topuria. Man, the odds on this fight are flipping. Topuria opened as a slight underdog. He jumped to a favorite. Now he's back to the underdog. And a lot of people are picking Volkanovski to win this fight. I 100% get it. I think that he is the more well-rounded fighter. I think Volkanovski has the better championship cardio. I think in round 4 and round 5, just on the way I expect the fight to play out, that Volkanovski could get a late finish over Topuria if he's able to survive early. I 100% get it. I think the wrestling is going to kind of cancel each other out. But I think the stronger fighter is Ilia Topuria. I think Topuria is stronger. He has more knockout power. He has stronger takedowns, stronger top control. I think the better ground and pound comes from Volkanovski. But I really just find it hard to see an area or see a world in where Topuria doesn't finish Volkanovski. I don't like picking against either guy. I've never picked against Volkanovski. I've never picked against Topuria ever on the podcast one time. This is the first time I'll have to make a decision with two of my favorite fighters in the UFC and who I think is going to win. I know that Volk took that fight against Islam Makhachev the second time on short notice. I know he said he was drinking leading up to the fight. He shouldn't have taken it. I agree, he shouldn't have taken it. I think it was a bad decision to take it, but he's a tough guy and he's exactly what he's known to be. He is what his occupation requires. He is a fighter. But he still got head kicked and got knocked out by Islam Makhachev. That was back at UFC 294. We're at UFC 298. UFC 294 was October 21st, we're in February, November, December, January, February, 4 months after he got knocked out cold. I know he wasn't out cold, but he was basically out cold with that head kick. He started with a body kick, landed a head kick, and then knocked him out. Was Volk prepared? No. Was he ready to take the fight? No. Should he have taken the fight? No. But does that change the fact that he got knocked out? No, it doesn't. And I think that even if he wouldn't have taken that Makhachev lost the way that he did, it still would have been a close fight. And I'm not saying I would have picked Topuria to beat Volkanovski before, but I still would have felt like Volkanovski was liable to get knocked out against a guy who hits as hard and as clean and as technical and is as fast as Topuria. He also has good wrestling. We've seen him showcase his wrestling. We saw him stuff the wrestling and pancake Bryce Mitchell and submit Bryce Mitchell, who is known as one of the best grapplers in the division. We saw him take down and drop Josh Emmett. Josh Emmett's gotten dropped before. He's gotten taken down before. But this guy just doesn't really have a lot of holes. He got dropped with a lead head kick from Jai Herbert. Came back, found his way back into the fight after getting rocked and hurt. Landed a big left hook to the body and a right hand up top and knocked Jai Herbert's head into the crowd. I think that coming off that knockout, Ilia Topuria is going to knock out Alexander Volkanovski. Do I think Volkanovski has had tougher competition? Yes. Do I think Volkanovski wins if it gets into round 4 and round 5? Yes, I think he wins late. I think if Volkanovski wins, it's either a fourth or fifth round TKO or a decision. Do I like picking against either of these guys? No, and it pains me to do it because I have to pick against somebody. But I think the power of Topuria at this point in Volkanovski's career, maybe I'm reading too much into that last knockout. That could be the case, but I think even if he didn't have that fight, I would still find ways where Topuria could knock out Volkanovski. And it's not like he's just a big power puncher who doesn't have technique, who doesn't have footwork, who doesn't set his shots up well. He sets up his shots well. He uses good fakes and feints. He finds openings and he exploits them. And I think that's what he's going to do against Volkanovski. Now, do I think it's going to be a round one knockout? No. But I think Ilya Topuria is going to knock out Alexander Volkanovski and become the new UFC featherweight champion. I think it's going to be a third round knockout. I don't think it gets to the championship rounds, but I think he's going to work that body. Volk's going to have some good moments as well. I think Volk might get a takedown. I think that would be, it would be good for Volk to use his grappling more in this fight, mixing up the grappling and the takedowns and using the ground and pound. I do think he can slow down Topuria. And we do like look at Pfeiffer versus Hermanson, Topuria versus, you know, Volk. It's a different kind of style matchup. And I think Topuria is a better fighter than Pfeiffer, but you can't put all your eggs in one basket when breaking down a fight like this. But I do think that the technical ability, the footwork, the counter, the good boxing, the lateral movement, the in and out movement, literally fighting like a matador, I think he's going to find a big counter on Volkanovski with that right hand. And he's going to put him down and he's going to finish him. Give me Ilya El Matador Topuria to defeat Alexander Volkanovski via third round knockout and become the new UFC featherweight champion. I'm not going to bet the main event. I'm not going to touch it at all. I have too much respect for both guys. I'm not touching it. I think there's better ways to make your money on this card. But that's it. That's it for my UFC 298 preview, predictions, and breakdown. The fights take place this upcoming Saturday, February 17th, from Anaheim, California at the Honda Center, live on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. You can get this podcast anywhere you get your audio podcast. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Breaker, Stitcher, and many, many more. This podcast will be uploaded and edited to my YouTube channel, which is the same name as the podcast, at the Touch 'Em Up Podcast. I'm your host, Double M, and I'm out. Enjoy the fights this weekend.